Harry Potter has become more than just a literary phenomenon. It's a cultural touchstone that defined a generation. The sixth installment in J.K. Rowling's beloved series, Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, marked a dramatic turning point in the saga, selling 9 million copies within 24 hours of its release. Beyond its commercial success, the book represented a significant tonal shift, with Rowling herself describing it as the beginning of the end. Even before its publication, fans worldwide organized midnight release parties, with celebrities like Daniel Radcliffe and Emma Watson admitting they couldn't wait to discover the identity of the mysterious Half-Blood Prince. The darker themes of mortality, sacrifice, and destiny resonated deeply with readers who had grown up alongside Harry, making this penultimate chapter particularly poignant as it prepared us for the final confrontation between good and evil. The wizarding world has changed dramatically since Voldemort's return, transforming from a place of wonder into a landscape of fear and suspicion. The story opens with an unprecedented scene, the Muggle Prime Minister receiving a visit from former Minister of Magic Cornelius Fudge and his successor Rufus Scrimgeour. The gravity of the situation becomes immediately clear as Fudge admits they're at war, his usual pompous demeanor replaced by genuine terror. Bridges have collapsed, killing dozens of Muggles. Mysterious hurricanes have devastated entire communities in West Country. Prominent wizards like Amelia Bones, head of the Department of Magical Law Enforcement and one of the Ministry's most capable leaders, have been brutally murdered in supposedly secure locations. Most chilling of all, the Dementors have abandoned Azkaban to join Voldemort, breeding freely and spreading their soul-crushing mist across Britain, causing unprecedented levels of depression and despair among both magical and Muggle populations. This opening brilliantly establishes the stakes while demonstrating how thoroughly Voldemort has undermined the pillars of magical society. No longer contained within Hogwarts walls, his reign of terror now affects both magical and non-magical communities with increasing brutality. The Death Eaters operate with growing boldness, conducting targeted assassinations and spreading fear through seemingly random acts of violence. When the Prime Minister desperately asks why wizards can't simply use magic to solve everything, Scrimgeour's response cuts to the heart of the conflict. The trouble is, the other side can do magic too. This simple truth underscores the fundamental challenge Harry faces. Raw power alone won't be enough to defeat Voldemort. The conflict will require strategy, wisdom, and choices that go beyond mere magical ability. The atmosphere of fear extends far beyond Britain's borders, with international magical communities watching in horror as Voldemort's influence grows. Even at Hogwarts, traditionally the safest place in the wizarding world, parents are withdrawing their children in unprecedented numbers. Security measures have intensified dramatically, with teams of Aurors stationed permanently at Hogsmeade and magical protection strengthened around the castle. New enchantments include secrecy sensors, probity probes, and enhanced protective charms on every entrance. The Ministry, struggling to maintain order, distributes pamphlets with largely useless security advice, while opportunistic vendors hawk fake protective amulets and counterfeit defensive objects to exploit public fear. This climate of anxiety and uncertainty creates a powerful backdrop for Harry's coming-of-age story, as he must find courage and leadership in a world where even experienced adult wizards feel helpless and afraid. The war has created a new normal, one where trust is rare, safety is an illusion, and ordinary wizards must choose between what is right and what is easy. The Half-Blood Prince delves deeper into Voldemort's origins than any previous book, revealing how Tom Riddle transformed from a troubled orphan into the most feared dark wizard in history. Through Dumbledore's collected memories, we witness Riddle's disturbing childhood at the orphanage, where he already displayed sadistic tendencies and remarkable magical control. "I can make things move without touching them," young Tom tells Dumbledore. "I can make animals do what I want without training them. I can make bad things happen to people who are mean to me." These early demonstrations of power were accompanied by acts of calculated cruelty, stealing other children's possessions as trophies and using magic to terrorize his peers, suggesting a pattern of behavior that would define his future path. Particularly haunting is the revelation of Voldemort's family history. The Gaunts, descendants of Salazar Slytherin, lived in squalor despite their pureblood heritage, their mansion deteriorating into a filthy hovel in Little Hangleton. Marvolo Gaunt, consumed by delusions of grandeur, valued his ancestry above all else, wearing Slytherin's locket and the Peveril ring as proof of his lineage while neglecting his children. His obsession with blood purity led to generations of inbreeding, resulting in mental instability and poverty. His daughter Merope, treated as little more than a servant and subjected to constant abuse, found escape in her love for the handsome muggle Tom Riddle Sr. She likely used a love potion to marry him, a desperate act that would have profound consequences. When she stopped administering the potion, believing he would stay for their unborn child, Tom abandoned her, leaving Merope to die in poverty at Wool's orphanage after naming their son Tom Marvolo Riddle. This tragic backstory creates unsettling parallels between Harry and Voldemort. Both orphans, both half-bloods, both parcel-mouths, both raised without knowledge of their magical heritage. Yet their choices diverge dramatically. While Voldemort became obsessed with his Slytherin heritage and rejected his Muggle father's name, crafting his new identity through an anagram of his birth name, Harry embraces the legacy of both his magical and Muggle-born parents. Their contrasting responses to love prove especially significant. Harry draws strength from his capacity to love and be loved, while Voldemort sees love as a weakness to be eliminated. As Dumbledore explains, Lord Voldemort has never had a friend, nor do I believe that he has ever wanted one. This fundamental difference shapes their destinies more than any prophecy. These glimpses into Voldemort's past aren't merely historical curiosities. They're crucial to understanding his vulnerabilities and the choices that shaped him. The memories reveal his obsession with powerful magical artifacts, his determination to obscure his half-blood status, and his deep-seated fear of death. By learning how Tom Riddle became Lord Voldemort through a combination of natural talent, calculated manipulation, and increasingly dark magic, Harry gains the knowledge necessary to eventually defeat him. This underscores Rowling's theme that understanding one's enemy is as important as raw magical power, and that our choices, more than our abilities or circumstances, define who we truly are. No character in the series inspires more debate than Severus Snape, and the Half-Blood Prince places him at the center of its most shocking twist. Throughout the book, clues about Snape's true allegiance accumulate like pieces of an impossible puzzle. We learn he made an unbreakable vow to protect Draco Malfoy and complete Voldemort's mysterious task if Draco fails. Later, Harry overhears Snape offering to help Malfoy, who rebuffs him suspiciously. These moments suggest either deep treachery or an incredibly dangerous double game. The revelation that Snape is the Half-Blood Prince himself adds another layer of complexity. Harry has spent months admiring the prince's brilliant potion innovations and spell creations, even defending him against Hermione's suspicions. The discovery that his potions mentor is actually his most hated professor creates a profound cognitive dissonance. How could someone Harry despises be responsible for the knowledge that brought him such success? This question mirrors the larger enigma of Snape's character. Is he truly evil, or is there more to his story than meets the eye? Snape's apparent betrayal culminates in the book's most devastating moment, Dumbledore's death on the Astronomy Tower. When Draco fails to kill the headmaster, Snape steps forward and casts the killing curse without hesitation. The scene is masterfully written, with Dumbledore's final plea, "Severus, please," hanging ambiguously in the air. Is he begging for his life or asking Snape to fulfill a previously arranged plan? The answer remains tantalizingly out of reach. What makes Snape such a compelling character is this persistent ambiguity. Even as he flees Hogwarts after murdering Dumbledore, his actions remain puzzling. He prevents other Death Eaters from killing Harry, insisting Potter belongs to the Dark Lord. When Harry attempts to use Snape's own Sectum Sempra spell against him, Snape erupts with fury. "You dare use my own spells against me, Potter? It was I who invented them. I, the Half-Blood Prince." This outburst suggests a complex pride in his creations that transcends his current allegiances. By the book's end, readers are left questioning everything they thought they knew about Severus Snape. His apparent villainy is complicated by 6 years of subtle characterization that hint at deeper motivations. This masterful ambiguity keeps us turning pages, desperate to understand the true nature of the man who killed Albus Dumbledore. Against the backdrop of war and death, the sixth book explores teenage romance with surprising depth and authenticity. Harry's growing feelings for Ginny Weasley evolve naturally from friendship to attraction, developing through small moments, her scent in the Amortentia potion, stolen glances across the common room, and the monster in his chest that roars whenever Dean Thomas touches her. Their relationship builds with exquisite tension until their spontaneous kiss after the Quidditch final, one of the series' most joyful moments. The scene perfectly captures both the impulsiveness of young love and its ability to create moments of pure joy, even in dark times. Meanwhile, Ron and Hermione's long-simmering tension erupts into a complex dance of jealousy and hurt feelings. Their sixth-year drama unfolds through a series of increasingly charged encounters. Hermione's invitation to Slughorn's party, Ron's cruel mimicry of her eagerness in class, and the spectacular conjuring of attacking birds. Ron's relationship with Lavender Brown becomes a masterclass in teenage relationship dysfunction, complete with public displays of affection that make everyone uncomfortable, Wonwon and Lav-Lav, and Hermione's retaliatory date with McLagan. Their emotional turbulence, filled with misunderstandings, petty retaliations, and unspoken longing, captures the awkwardness of adolescent romance with painful accuracy. These relationships aren't merely subplots, they're integral to the book's exploration of love as a force that sustains us through darkness. When Harry must break up with Ginny to protect her from Voldemort, the scene in the garden after Dumbledore's funeral becomes doubly poignant, a moment of personal sacrifice that mirrors the larger sacrifices demanded by war. Ginny's quiet understanding, "I knew you wouldn't be happy unless you were hunting Voldemort," demonstrates a mature love that can accept necessary separation. The adult relationships provide deeper perspectives on love's power and complexity. Fleur Delacour's unwavering commitment to Bill Weasley after his disfigurement by Fenrir Greyback becomes a turning point in how the Weasley family, particularly Molly, sees her. "What do I care how he looks?" she demands, her accent thickening with emotion. "I am good-looking enough for both of us, I think." This moment catalyzes several revelations. Mrs. Weasley's acceptance of Fleur, Tonks's public confrontation with Lupin about his self-imposed isolation, and the broader theme that love requires courage to overcome prejudice and fear. Through these intertwining relationships, Rowling illustrates that love isn't just the power that once saved Harry from Voldemort, it's what makes life worth fighting for. The contrast between Voldemort, who has never known love, and Harry, who is surrounded by it despite his losses, becomes increasingly significant. This is further emphasized through memories of young Tom Riddle, who viewed love as a weakness, and Dumbledore's insistence that Harry's ability to love is his greatest power. McGonagall's observation that Dumbledore would have been happier than anybody to think that there was a little more love in the world serves as a poignant reminder that even in war, especially in war, love remains our strongest shield against darkness. The prophecy revealed in Order of the Phoenix casts a long shadow over Harry in this book. "Neither can live while the other survives" weighs heavily on him as he realizes he must eventually become either victim or murderer. When Harry finally shares this burden with Ron and Hermione, their immediate support demonstrates the friendship that has been his strength throughout the series. Dumbledore's private lessons represent Harry's preparation for this destiny. Rather than teaching advanced combat magic, as Harry initially expects, Dumbledore focuses on understanding Voldemort's past and psychology. This approach emphasizes that defeating Voldemort requires wisdom and insight, not just magical prowess. As Dumbledore tells Harry, it is important to fight and fight again and keep fighting, for only then could evil be kept at bay, though never quite eradicated. The revelation about Horcruxes, objects containing fragments of Voldemort's soul, transforms Harry's mission from a single confrontation to a complex hunt. Voldemort's creation of multiple Horcruxes explains his survival after attempting to kill baby Harry and provides a concrete path forward: find and destroy these objects before confronting Voldemort himself. This knowledge gives Harry purpose beyond simply surviving until their final encounter. The cave sequence, where Harry and Dumbledore retrieve what they believe is Slytherin's locket, illustrates the personal cost of this quest. Forcing Dumbledore to drink the torturous potion is Harry's most difficult act yet, a necessary cruelty that foreshadows the hard choices ahead. When they discover the locket is a fake, with a note from the mysterious R.A.B., the magnitude of Harry's task becomes clear. He must continue this hunt without Dumbledore's guidance, relying on his own judgment and the support of his friends. By the book's end, Harry has fully accepted his destiny. His decision not to return to Hogwarts marks his transition from student to warrior. When Ron and Hermione immediately pledge to join him, Harry experiences a moment of profound gratitude that balances the weight of his burden. The thought that they would not be returning to Hogwarts was like a weight being lifted from his mind. In choosing to face his destiny with friends by his side, Harry demonstrates that while prophecy may determine his path, how he walks it remains his choice. Dumbledore's death represents the book's emotional climax and a pivotal moment in the series, marking the end of childhood innocence and protected guidance. Throughout six books, Dumbledore has been Harry's mentor, protector, and the embodiment of goodness in the wizarding world, a figure whose mere presence at Hogwarts ensured safety and order. His vulnerability, revealed through his blackened, injured hand and his increasing frailty throughout the year, culminating in his weakness in the cave, makes his death all the more devastating. These signs of mortality in someone previously thought invincible serve as harbingers of the darkness to come. The scene on the astronomy tower unfolds with tragic inevitability, masterfully constructed to maximize emotional impact. Immobilized and hidden under his invisibility cloak, Harry watches helplessly as events spiral beyond his control. The moment when Draco disarms Dumbledore, a seemingly minor action that will later prove crucial to the series' conclusion, sets in motion an unstoppable chain of events. The arrival of the Death Eaters transforms the secure sanctuary of Hogwarts into a battlefield, and finally, Snape's delivery of the Killing Curse shatters the last vestiges of Harry's protected world. Dumbledore's fall from the tower, described with stark simplicity, for a split second, he seemed to hang suspended beneath the shining skull, and then he fell slowly backward, like a great rag doll, over the battlements and out of sight, becomes an image that haunts both Harry and readers, marking the definitive end of an era. In death, Dumbledore becomes more complex than in life, as truth and uncertainty intertwine. Harry's discoveries about his mentor shake his foundations. The fake Horcrux reveals a critical miscalculation, raising questions about Dumbledore's judgment. The mystery of his trust in Snape deepens, forcing Harry to grapple with doubt about the man he idolized. Yet the White Tomb by the lake and the Phoenix Song of Mourning serve as powerful symbols, affirming Dumbledore's fundamental goodness despite his human flaws. His absence creates a void that Harry must fill, forcing him to transition from student to leader, relying on his own judgment rather than seeking guidance from his mentor. The funeral scene serves as a powerful testament to Dumbledore's impact, bringing together the wizarding world's diverse elements in an unprecedented gathering. Centaurs emerge from their forest, merpeople surface from the lake's depths, ministry officials stand alongside students and teachers, all united in grief. This moment of unity amid division offers a glimmer of hope even in darkness, suggesting that Dumbledore's death might achieve in passing what he strived for in life, the unification of the magical world against evil. As Harry reflects, there was something in knowing that he and Voldemort had both been orphaned at Hogwarts that had created a bond between them. Both had found their first real home here. This parallel underscores the choices that define character more than circumstances. Dumbledore's death transforms Harry's quest from a guided journey to a solitary mission, forcing him to step into the role of leader. When Scrimgeour asks what he and Dumbledore discussed during their private meetings, Harry's response, "Dumbledore's man through and through," becomes more than mere loyalty. It's a declaration of intent to carry forward Dumbledore's values and mission. The torch has been passed, and Harry must now light the way forward, armed with the lessons and love Dumbledore left behind, but ultimately standing on his own. Throughout The Half-Blood Prince, characters face difficult choices about where their loyalties lie. Draco Malfoy's storyline poignantly illustrates this theme. Tasked by Voldemort with killing Dumbledore, a mission designed to punish Lucius Malfoy's failures, Draco finds himself trapped between fear for his family and his inability to commit murder. His deteriorating appearance throughout the year, paler and thinner than ever, physically manifests his internal conflict. The confrontation on the astronomy tower reveals Draco's fundamental decency. Despite having Dumbledore wandless and weakened, he hesitates, unable to cast the killing curse. When Dumbledore offers protection for him and his family, Draco begins to lower his wand, a small but significant act of courage. This moment suggests that even those raised in prejudice can choose a different path when confronted with the reality of their beliefs. Narcissa Malfoy demonstrates similar complexity when she risks Voldemort's wrath to protect her son. Her visit to Snape's home at Spinner's End, where she begs him to help Draco and binds him with the unbreakable vow, reveals that maternal love transcends even Death Eater loyalty. "He's my son, my only son," she pleads, echoing Lily Potter's sacrifice for Harry years before. Horace Slughorn's relationship with Tom Riddle illustrates how misplaced loyalty can have catastrophic consequences. His fondness for the charismatic student led him to explain Horcruxes, inadvertently helping Riddle achieve immortality. Slughorn's shame about this memory, which he tampered with to hide his culpability, shows the burden of such a mistake. When Harry finally obtains the true memory, Slughorn's parting words, "Don't think too badly of me once you've seen it," reveal his fear of judgment. Even Creature, the black family house elf, illustrates the power and pain of loyalty. His devotion to Regulus Black, later revealed as R.A.B., and resentment toward Sirius demonstrate how deeply loyalty can shape one's identity. When Harry orders him to tail Malfoy, Creature's reluctance contrasts sharply with Dobby's eager assistance, highlighting their different experiences with the masters they've served. Through these varied examples, Rowling explores loyalty not as blind allegiance, but as a choice that must be constantly reassessed. The characters who remain loyal to their deepest values, rather than specific individuals or ideologies, ultimately find the strength to face the coming war. As Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince concludes, the stage is set for the final confrontation between Harry and Voldemort. The mysterious textbook that guided Harry throughout the year, with its scribbled improvements to potions recipes and invented spells like Levicarpus and the dangerous Sectum Sempra, symbolizes the ambiguous knowledge Harry has gained. Just as the prince's book contained both helpful wisdom and dangerous magic, Harry's journey has revealed both the light and dark aspects of the wizarding world. The revelation that Severus Snape is the Half-Blood Prince creates a perfect metaphor for the book's central theme. Nothing is as simple as it first appears. The half-blood status that Snape once embraced, before becoming a Death Eater, mirrors Voldemort's own mixed heritage, which he desperately conceals. Both men reinvented themselves to escape their origins, but while Voldemort rejected his humanity entirely, Snape's story remains unfinished, his true nature still concealed behind layers of deception. Harry's decision to leave Hogwarts marks his final step from childhood to adulthood. The school that once represented safety and belonging can no longer shelter him from his destiny. Yet even as he faces this somber reality, a moment of warmth breaks through. Ron's insistence that Harry attend Bill and Fleur's wedding before beginning his Horcrux hunt. One last golden day of peace, as Harry thinks of it, reminds us that even in the darkest times, life celebrations continue. The White Tomb by the lake serves as both an ending and a beginning. Dumbledore's death closes an era, but Harry's acceptance of his mission opens the path to Voldemort's eventual defeat. As the book ends, uncertainty looms, but so does hope, embodied in the friendships that have sustained Harry throughout his journey. When Ron and Hermione pledge to accompany him on his dangerous quest, Harry feels his heart lift at the thought of that little bit of brightness in the days ahead. This bittersweet conclusion perfectly captures the essence of The Half-Blood Prince, a story about finding light in darkness, courage in fear, and love in a world threatened by hate. As readers close the book, they understand that while the final battle approaches, Harry faces it not alone, but surrounded by the love that Voldemort has never understood, and that may ultimately prove his undoing.